happening now. Putin gives his press conference following the meeting with the United States and our president, President Biden. Next, President Biden gives his press conference in Geneva. We've got Rick Rennell to help us break it all down for you today on Seculo.
Live from Washington, D.C., Seculo Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, so the summit between the United States and Russia, between President Biden and President Putin has come to an end. President Putin right now is holding a press conference like we have discussed throughout this weekend and even last week as this trip was beginning. No joint press conference. So instead, Russia going first with President Putin, and then President Biden will be second. And again, we'll cut into some of this for you just to give a flavor. Obviously, President Putin is speaking in Russian, so and some of the questions are in Russian, some are in other languages. So it's mostly dubbed over in translation. But we will go to that for you in the next segment of the broadcast so you get a little bit of a flavor. All of it started off in a kind of chaotic way in the sense that usually these are very predetermined, pre-planned events where chaos is not a word you use, even when you've got strong disagreements between these two countries and questions about why they are even holding this meeting right now. A lot of critics saying this is too early in an administration unless there's some pressing problem to have these to sit down with an adversary before your staffs have been able to kind of hammer out what are the three main topics they should focus on. Where can we come to an agreement and basically be able to come out, do a press conference and say, hey, we agree on this, 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 and this. Instead, we see these separate press conferences, not a sign of agreement at all, but a sign of, a division. But it started off chaotically with reporters trying to get in the room to just take the initial footage as they sat down for their meeting or some pictures as they sat down for the meeting. But what you ultimately had here is a situation where there was Russian security pushing back on the military, U.S. staff, Biden staff, State Department staff saying you can't push reporters that way, and that's how it started off. Then it went into about a four-hour meeting or so. The first meeting was about an hour and a half. That was very limited to the president of these two nations. And there are two, the Secretary of State Blinken and the Foreign Minister Lavrov from Russia. Then they did an expanded out meeting with their advisors as well. So a significant amount of time. The big question is, we know the list of grievances. We know the hacks. We know there's Americans imprisoned abroad in Russia. We know about, these situations, Ukraine, Russia's work with Iran. I mean, the list goes on and on. The question is, did any of this get not just even resolved, but even on a path to resolution? I want to go right now to Wes Smith. Wes, we've been watching this together this morning as we were kind of debating where to focus because we didn't know when this would start. And Putin came right out of this meeting, right to the podium to speak to the press, which to me signals that at a minimum, he didn't lose anything. I mean, I'm still waiting for translations on all of this, but it doesn't seem like Russia and the way that his top advisors were, their body language, which Russian body language can be pretty hard to read unless they're laughing.
Yes.
Which is a pretty interesting signal for them to send.
Yeah, it's truly, truly. Timing is important as well as perceptions. And I thought about both of those throughout this meeting, timing and perception. And on the timing piece, critics have said it was too soon for President Biden to do this. Probably so. There were not a lot of tangible, deliverable things to be accomplished. Maybe returning the ambassadors to their respective capitals, because whenever Biden called Putin a killer, they withdrew their ambassador from D.C. and we responded accordingly. But the timing's off. There wasn't a whole lot to accomplish. I think the perception piece is going to be the most significant part, how they come off perception-wise with their domestic audiences, both Biden and Putin.
Yeah, so Putin told a CNN correspondent there was no hostility during the meeting with Biden, said it was constructive, and they'll begin consultations on cybersecurity. That's interesting. We'll be right back.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
The one area of agreement, it looks like so far, is that there should be ambassadors should return to Moscow and to Washington, D.C. from the respective countries. Just to give you a sense here, this is, again, translated. Putin is speaking now live, if you're hearing this broadcast live, in Geneva, following this four-plus-hour-long meeting with the United States, including an hour and a half with those two presidents and their top diplomats, the foreign minister for Russia, the secretary of state for the United States. But take a listen, Byte 17. This is, again, Putin with the translation, of course.
The two ambassadors we agreed should return to their posts and take up their functions. It's a purely technical question as to exactly when that will happen, tomorrow, the day after tomorrow, or whatever. And the consultations will begin on a whole raft of diplomatic issues.
So, there you go. If this was literally a meeting just to get our ambassadors back, you wonder, okay, but there was another 4 hours there. He did talk about cyber security. He said that will ultimately be discussed. They agreed to discuss that. You just heard there, this agreement to discuss, that basically were they just going through a litany of items to say, okay, we'll start allowing our diplomatic staff to discuss this. Now, the important part of this will, of course, be hearing what President Biden's interpretation of this was. There was some scuffle about, was he nodding when he said that, that there would, Russia is a great power, and this list goes on. And but I think that there was chaos at the beginning. The truth is, it'll be interesting to see if what Putin says is basically in line with what Biden says, or are there any major differences? And what will this actually come down to? I haven't heard anybody talk about Iran. I haven't talked about Ukraine. It talked about elections there, but that's how Putin is talking about it, not necessarily the ongoing conflict as well. He did acknowledge that their positions are, he called, the way it was translated was as divergent, which means you don't agree. So you're meeting with an adversary and they're coming out and saying, we have different positions. Take a listen again to Putin.
many of our joint positions are divergent, but nevertheless, I think that both sides manifested determination to try and understand each other and try and converge our positions. And I think it was very constructive. As far as cyber security is concerned, we agreed that we would begin consultations on that issue. And I believe that's extraordinarily important. And obviously, both sides have to assume certain obligations there.
So, you know, to me, Athan, there's kind of that idea, in Putin's words, right where he says that both sides have to assume certain obligations of equating the cyber attacks we're seeing out of Russia and something that he's talking about is coming out of the United States, though nothing has been reported widely in the news about any Russian systems being going down by hacking or anything like that. Certainly not anything out of the United States being responsible for it. The Russia is a country that has major criminal elements that have significant impact on how the state functions. The United States does not function that way. But again, this idea that cybersecurity, which is major when you talk about our pipelines, when you talk about the grids, and all they've done is to agree that they'll begin discussing it.
Well, it's suggesting a moral equivalency, isn't it? I mean, it's going to be very interesting to contrast that with what President Biden says when he comes out. I wonder if his posture is going to mirror what his posture and demeanor was inside the room. It's going to be, I don't know if we'll ever know that, Jordan, but that would be interesting to know. You know, I would first echo your point about you don't need a face-to-face meeting between these two leaders to begin staff-level discussions. I mean, that's something that's already happened with China. It certainly could have been ordered by both leaders. I was interested, though, Jordan, you alluded to this before the break, but Vladimir Putin is saying that there was no hostilities between President Biden and himself. So I guess he didn't take the killer approach. I guess he took the worthy adversary approach inside the room. But I would just tell you, Jordan, my sort of top line takeaway from this, Vladimir Putin's already got what he wanted out of this. He wanted visibility and he wanted elevation on the world stage. And as I sit here watching this press conference, I obviously can't hear it right now. You're playing sound from it. But that's what he's getting. He's being elevated on the world stage. So I think in Putin's mind, this is already a win.
Yeah, I mean, so Wes, what do you think about that? I mean, the idea again, we spent all this time, we've spent years in the United States elevating Vladimir Putin, and the media has elevated Russia's role and their ability to interfere. You know, was it with their elections? Did they do that? Were they working on it with a campaign? You know, on and on and on. All we've heard is Russia and Russia, and then now we have yet another summit, a new American president, and puts Vladimir Putin right back on the world stage, looking like a leader, like Biden said, like a worthy adversary. We even commented on the difference in the way his advisors, their body language, yes, the age, the experience level. These are names that, because of his autocracy, those who follow the news closely and international news know, have come to know, like Sergei Lavrov, who has been the foreign minister for as long as I can remember.
When you get into these kind of high-level geopolitical, conferences and policies and strategies, perception is critically important, and that's part of what you're alluding to. You know, Vladimir Putin is ruthless. He's a dictator. He has, an unlimited term in power because he changed the laws in Russia and made himself, the absolute supreme leader, if you will. But even if that were not the case, even if he weren't a shrewd killer, as the president called him, and that's actually true, even if you took that off the table, he still comes off as strong, as does his team. And his principles may be way off, but Putin, he sticks to his principles, sticks to his guns. Whereas on the other hand, and I want our president to succeed, I want him to be strong, but in his demeanor and in his policies, President Biden at times appears hesitant and weak. For example, he telegraphed his move going into this meeting with Putin by lifting the sanctions, connected to the Russian pipeline. Why would you do that? Whereas he telegraphs what he's thinking, Putin plays it very, very close to the vest. There are a number of things that President Biden could have confronted him on. Hopefully he did. You talk about the cyber attacks. Ukraine. You know, this pipeline is bypassing Ukraine by Russian design to continue to isolate them as far as their energy and their economy. You look at the 20 brand new military units that Russia has formed on the border with our NATO countries. You look at energy. You look at Iran. There are a number of things that Russia needs to be confronted on. The question is, did President Biden do that? And I'm not sure this early in his administration that some of those things happened. Maybe we'll find out. And one final thing concerning the cyber attacks. The other day when Putin was asked about this in a news conference, his response was not to deny any Russian knowledge or involvement in it, but simply to say, you have no proof of that. And he said it in a very smug way. In other words, he didn't say we didn't do it. It's you can't prove it. But a cyber attack should be responded to with a counterattack. That's what you do. Cyber war is another form of war. And so if Russia continues to do this, hopefully President Biden put them on notice that cyber war is war. And if we are attacked again, we will counterattack, because that's certainly what needs to happen.
You know, one thing I'm going to talk to Rick Rendell about is this focus, it seems, by the Russians, and we'll see if it's echoed by the Biden administration as well. But certainly this idea, and let me tell you, I think, Than, it points directly to how difficult it was for them to plan out, which is good, I think, if it's an adversary, kind of what they would do, because they could not predict Trump. They could not read him as well. He could smile at you with the one hand and at the same time be planning something that would be an aggressive action against you. Because he had that ability to work the media, work the room, and these situations. But Putin keeps saying stability, 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 which to me is just, we want to know where you're going to go, the United States. We want to know the lines. We want to know what lines we can cross, what lines we can't cross. He was just talking about that with cybersecurity. He said, we talked about red lines, but we didn't actually define what those red lines were. His ultimate goal, Than, is to get to a place where they can predict the United States. Makes their job easier.
Well, I think they would like the predictability of the Obama administration, don't you? I mean, look, they knew where the Obama administration was going to land. And if this can be the third term of the Obama administration, they win. I mean, look, Jordan, this is true in diplomacy. It's also true in warfare. If your adversary cannot predict your next move, if they're not sure exactly where they're going to go, that's a good thing for you. Look, you want to be predictable for your allies. That's the benefit of having allies. They can trust you. You can trust them. But if there is an adversary, Jordan, the last thing that you want them to know is what you're going to do before you do it.
All right. So we come back. Former acting director of national intelligence and ambassador to Germany, Rick Rendell, will be joining us to talk about all of this. We'll continue to monitor, of course, these press conferences as well. Biden will follow Putin, so there'll be no joint press conference here again, but we will get to see our president's interpretation of the meeting to see if they are in line with President Putin's as well. We'll be right back on Seculum.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
A unique moment in history, and we'll go to Rick Rennell here. In the translation, Rick, I just saw this up on the screen as we're about to talk. Vladimir Putin using Black Lives Matter, the arrest of January 6th, to deflect on his own human rights abuses and says, well, America mass arrested a bunch of people, and so I don't want to get into those details. We don't want to have that happen in Russia. And the question was just, the question he was asked was, if all your opponents are in jail or dead or outside the country, how can there be fair elections in your country? And he pivots very quickly. But I want to get your thoughts, Rick, just initially. We're just learning kind of what was discussed, what actually happened in this four-hour-plus meeting. But your just initial reactions.
Well, I'm listening to Putin's press conference right now, and I think you're right. The language that he's using is clearly the talking points from the Democrats about systemic racism. And that's troubling. I mean, I think that this is a warning for the Democratic Party that all of their criticism of America, and I would say unfounded criticism, by saying, you know, when you use the word systemic racism, you mean that the entire system, the entire operation is built to be racist. That is not true. And yet they continue to say it. And now our enemies and others are picking up this language and using it against us. We saw the Chinese use this in Alaska. We see the Russians are using this. I see Middle Eastern leaders from the NGO community beginning to use this language, and it's very troubling.
You know, Rick, another word that the Russians are pushing a lot of, and it'll be interesting to see if Joe Biden uses any of that same language, but that this word stability keeps being used over and over and again. And I mean, I think it sounds nice. You know, stability sounds great if you have stability in world affairs, stability between adversaries, if it all adds up. But is that the Russian way of stability, of just saying, hey, we want you off our backs? He even said in one of the translations was, we talked about red lines on cybersecurity, but we didn't actually get to any definitions of where those red lines would be.
Well, first of all, on cybersecurity, President Putin just completely blamed the United States, Canada, Great Britain, and Latin American countries for cyber attacks. He said it does not come from Russia, which we know is typical Putin speak. He always tries to pretend like everything is fine. And this gets at your question about stability. We have to be very clear that stability is not peace. It can be peace, but usually when leaders like Putin use stability, what they mean is you be quiet in fear. It's not peaceful. It's a stable situation for the government to then completely be corrupt. And that's not peaceful. And I think that not using the word, you know, peaceful is a real, poignant moment.
You know, Rick, I'm curious as, you know, ultimately, what do you think comes out of this? What's the achievement here? What happens after this? Because at this point, other than making Putin look strong and principled in his own perverse way, what else happens?
Well, first of all, President Putin is going to sit through G7 statements, press statements from the White House, maybe even some remarks from Biden and from the press. And he will be very pleased, because at the end of the day, he's going home with a pipeline of influence and cash for the next several decades. He is so pleased that this culminated with a Russian pipeline of leverage for 20 plus years, that he'll sit through any uncomfortable press moments or press statement moments. He's also decided, I see the announcement, that our ambassadors will be able to go back That's certainly a good thing. But I think this gets to Jordan's question about stability. Having our ambassadors go back plays into this idea that everything is stable and therefore fine. But I think that we have to be able to work and have transparency and look for peace rather than just this facade of stability.
States comes out of this, there's a lot coming out to benefit Russia.
Yeah, I don't see where we have gotten anything. I think we have sacrificed a lot, and I can't come up with anything other than our ambassador goes back, but our embassy has been open and others have been there. Our ambassadors go back, but that's such a diplomatic nicety that's not really a gift to the United States.
Right.
Hey, Rick, Than here. I just wanted to follow up on that real quick. I mean, we're all on Team America here. All of us have a vested interest in the American president, no matter who he is, doing well in situations like this and, you know, demonstrating and articulating American leadership in the world. I don't know how he pulls that off now, quite frankly. After the optics of seeing Vladimir Putin come out and sort of take the lead in this press conference, declining to appear alongside of him, I'm just interested in your perspective on this. Is there something that President Biden could do following up on this press conference to keep Vladimir Putin from emerging, you know, with the upper hand in all this? Or has Vladimir Putin already accomplished that?
It's a great question. I think Biden is looking weak. He's looking weak out of the G7. I mean, there were moments in those videos that I thought my video stopped because he was, you know, in meltdown mode. And my video didn't stop. It was Joe Biden kind of his mind collapsing. And so you see that. You see the British leader putting his hand over to Joe Biden a couple of times to kind of shush him and say, you know, we've already discussed that, Joe. President Biden, you know, laughing, almost being laughed at, but not realizing it, fumbling. Now he's not able to do a press conference with Putin. He's given up our Nord Stream 2 policy by giving the pipeline to the Russians. I think he looks incredibly weak, and we see not only Russia, but China and others beginning to test him. They're moving troops into Ukraine. Now we see some action over near Hawaii, military action from the Russians. And so it's clear that they don't fear him, and they're just clapping and applauding him because he's so weak.
Yeah, so, I mean, we will see Biden's press conference, Rick. My final question for you, though, Rick, before you know, we'll get to that and ultimately get some analysis there. But with everything that Putin is saying, he is – I want to go back to what you said. He is seizing – and he's done this before, but he is seizing on American domestic political divisions and just ramming that home through every single question, every single response. I mean, the fact that he invoked Black Lives Matter – that it was the direct translation was Black Lives Matter and the protests in the streets in America, the unrest, the January 6th, but also what he was talking about was the arrest of Americans on January 6th. So, well, you put down opposition. So, you know, I put down opposition. This to me, again, the way we talk about what's going on in our own country, it's just on display about how important that is.
Look, we can have political differences at home and they can be very, you know, tough rhetoric and fights. But what President Biden did at the G7 was really, and NATO, he opened us up by critiquing Republicans. He opened up the rest of the world
yep.
to critique Republicans. He did not have a unified message.
I've never seen anything like that before where you have a world leader internationally talking about domestic political parties in his own country and the turmoil he wishes they were having. Rick, it's always great to have you, especially during this summit. We'll be right back. Second half hour coming up on Seculo.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.